south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, before we get started today, I'd like to make a little correction concerning last week's show. Remember, I mentioned that there's two extra month salaries for your average Latin American person that's on the books. That means he's paying taxes and signed up for his own government's social security system, etc. Now, if you remember, I said the extra month's pay comes on July 15th and December 15th. Well, that's correct, but I got the names reversed. The July 15th extra payment is called the Bono 14, and the December 15th payment is called Aguinaldo. That's Aguinaldo. Just had those two names reversed. Not that it matters, right? Okay, now that you got that straight, if you plan on hiring Latins and putting them on the books, you'll have those two extra months' payments straight in your mind. However, in that regard, do note that if you do start a business down here in Latin America and you hire some locals, many times they'll say, well, I don't really want to be on the Social Security system. I don't want what they call a NIT number, which is a government tax number. Just pay me cash and that'll be fine. Now, Latins know when they're off the books, they don't get to participate in the Social Security system or the so-called socialized medical health care. But they don't seem to care because they know both of those government institutions are corrupt, failed systems. Now, if you don't trust your government up in the States, you ought to talk to a Latin down here. You ain't seen nothing yet. Latins, except ones that work for government, have zero faith in their government, and it's completely justified. Now, often when I tell people that they do have Social Security and national health care, first world people are surprised. When gringos, for example, see how poor the average person is down here, they wonder how such systems can even exist. As for government-run Social Security in Latin America, if you're eligible for it, you've been paying in for a certain amount of years, when you retire, you get anywhere from about 10 to 100 bucks a month. Yep, that's it. The fact is, I've never met an average Latin American middle-class guy that retired and made over 100 a month. And by the way, from time to time, you see on TV and in the local papers, old-timers marching and picketing outside the presidential palace and such because they haven't received that gigantic Social Security benefit for months and months. And sometimes you'll see old-timers marching because the checks bounced some system, huh? And you know, young people in Latin America almost never think about retirement, just like young people in the States never do. I didn't when I was 20, 25 years old. Back then, I didn't give a rip about Social Security and would have gladly been off the books if I could have been. But, you know, up there, if the government catches you, they'll tear you a new anus. However, down here in Latin America, they've got no militant IRS or labor police. Anyway, down here, a huge percentage of young people don't want to be on the books either. Mostly because, like in the U.S., the government withholds money out of your check for their Social Security, etc. Not to mention, Latin governments will withhold something like 10% for income taxes, too. And since most Latin American countries have a national health care system, which is also beyond putrid, they have to kick in for that. So, the average Latin American on the books gets about 10 to 20% of his check withheld every month, and people are always whining and complaining about that. Sound familiar? Oh, and by the way, this question often comes up with gringos and expats who start businesses down here in Latin America. They say, look, if I've got some Latins working off the books because they don't want to be on the books, that would mean then that I don't have to pay that extra 2 months' salary required by law because, hell, they're off the books, right? To which I say yes and no, because if you have a really good worker and that Bono 14 and an Aguinaldo payment come along, sometimes generous gringos will give it to them anyway. And sometimes your employee off the books will even ask you for it. So then you'll have to really judge it on individual cases. But obviously, they're off the books for a reason, so you're not obliged to do it. And yes, Latin countries do have labor boards that employees can complain to and get you, the employer, in hot water if some labor laws aren't obeyed. But obviously, if your workers are off the books, they've got no leg to stand on, and they're the ones that could be in trouble then, right? Now, speaking about getting amounts withheld from your check down here in Latin America, Just this week, I read in a very large Latin American journal of a certain university study that examined about 20 big banks in Latin America, looking for clues as to which segment of Latin American workers are in the most debt as a percentage of their income. And the results? Very surprising. You're never going to guess what career path in Latin America leads to the most amount of credit card debt. Now remember, anyone down here in Latin America who has a bank account at all can get a debit card, but we're talking about credit cards now. And note, that's not easy. To get an actual credit card, you have to have a steady job, not to mention professional references like from a lawyer or an accountant. However, people who own their own businesses or have professional careers like architects, doctors, nurses, etc., they can get credit cards relatively easy. In many cases, just like up in the States, they're pre-approved. So I'll ask you again, what career path in Latin America leads to the highest, by far, percentage of credit card debt relative to income? Well, no use guessing because you won't get it. It's policemen, the cops. Who'd have thunk, huh? Now, as this report shows, cops all over Latin America are in very bad credit trouble. In fact, the average cop in Latin America makes about $500 a month, and since he's on the books, definitely, about 100 of that he never sees, because between Social Security, the National Health, and taxes, automatic withholdings are from 15 to 20% of a cop's paycheck. So cops down in Latin America survive on about $100 a week, or $400 a month. But as you'll see, they don't bring home nearly that much. Now, the big problem here is that cops have always been afforded a nice line of credit from most banks, considering it's generally a very stable profession. Cops remain cops for years, even decades down here. That said, the first thing that happens when a cop gets out of the police academy down here, which lasts from 3 to 6 months. Yeah, right, I know what you're thinking, since most of these guys only have about a 10th grade education. Hell, hairdressers down here have a longer training period than cops. So then draw your own conclusions about the professionalism and brain power of your Latin men in blue, or black, or whatever. Certainly instills confidence, doesn't it? Anyway, there's one thing that Latin cops know is that as soon as they get out of the academy, they can go down to one of the big three banks in their country and instantly get a credit card. A real credit card, not a debit card. And believe it or not, according to this very recent study, the average cop is in so much debt. Not just with credit cards either, because department and appliance stores are quick to give credit to cops too. So, the report goes on to say, sadly, about a third to a quarter of all cops in Latin America only bring home about, get this, $100 a month. And 10% of cops are so much in debt, they bring home less than $50 a month. So then the question is, how does a cop and his family live on $100 a month or less? It is the custom down here in Latin America for everyone in the family to chip in to the general family pot. So if mother's a checkout lady at the grocery store, she's making $250 or $300 a month. And Juanito's maybe out there selling choco bananas on the street corner, bringing down maybe $80 or $100 too. Then you've got Sister Juanita selling Avon or Amway to the neighbors and pulling down another $80 to $100 a month. You get the idea. Anyway, a middle-class family down here needs to make about $600 or $700 a month just to scrape by so that the family's not on the edge of the abyss and at the end of every month not close to falling apart at the seams. Now, remember, if dad's only bringing home $100 a month out of his normal $400 a month salary, what do you think's going to happen? Well, I'll tell you what. He's a cop, he's got a uniform, and he's going to do what most cops down here do when chronically short on cash. He's going to hit people up for bribes, especially around the holidays. Not to mention when you're only bringing in $100 or so a month as the so-called head of the family. It's a real self-esteem killer, especially in this very macho Latin American world. So everywhere throughout Latin America, you've got corrupt, depressed cops, which tends to escalate family and drinking problems too. So just thought I'd shine a little light on a problem down here that never really revealed its roots until now. Okay, now said about that. Now, in the things that drive me nuts department, here's something that gets on my nerves every time I see it in the newspaper or see an ad for it on one of the big billboards along the highways here. Well, first let me preface this by saying that Latin America has some of the finest rainforest hardwood in the world. And though y'all up there in Kalamazoo and Cleveland might be reading that Latin America is being heavily deforested and that soon enough rainforest hardwoods are going to be extinct, well, the deforestation part is certainly true, especially down in places like Argentina and Brazil, where there's massive jungle hardwood clear-cutting going on for mining and cattle grazing and agriculture. It's a shame, I know, but it's not necessarily the end of rainforest hardwood. In fact, I still see many fantastic hardwood trees every single day as I drive around through Latin America. They're everywhere. In fact, many gringo expats are getting in on the act and planting hardwood tree forests themselves. I know of two people doing it right now. In fact, each of these guys has over 100,000 teak trees. Now, both of these guys have told me confidentially that if this is not their retirement, it'll certainly make their kids rich. Now, I personally think that giving riches to your kids like that's a very stupid idea. But I've met a lot of gringos who are affected with that disease. But I also know it's dangerous to bring it up in conversation with them because they're very single-mindedly stubborn about it. They think somehow they're doing their kids a big favor. Well, they're not. Anyway, that said, there's obviously huge money in hardwood forests. You can get in on it quite easily. It doesn't take much. You could buy or rent some untillable land on the side of a mountain if you like. It doesn't matter. The trees don't care. And about the trees, well, the saplings are very, very cheap. Pennies a piece. However, you got a 20-year wait at least before you make a single dime. You'll be sitting on an investment that makes zero money for a long, long time. But like I said in a past show, just one of these tree trunks, whether it's caoba or mahogany or teak, whatever, could easily even these days go for $10,000, which is why after about 10 or 15 years, you need to have your forest guarded 24/7. And because of that clear cutting down in Brazil, etc., those prices are absolutely guaranteed to skyrocket. Now, the part that makes me mad, even sad, is the fact that when you look at building and construction magazines down here, etc., where they show construction projects and the latest, greatest hardware and materials, a lot of it coming from Europe and the US, like, for example, Pella Windows. Yep, believe it or not, they're down here now, too. And yes, unfortunately, the proliferation now of asphalt shingles. And you know, crazy as it sounds, naive Latin builders snap that stuff up because they think, well, it's from the States, it's first world, must be good. It's that gringo advantage, or in this case, disadvantage. Remember, asphalt and fiber shingles are killed by excessive sun, and down here, you got the sun on steroids. You think it's hot in the summertime in Nevada? When you install asphalt or fiberglass shingles down here, they virtually melt into your roof in the first couple of months. Then, a little while after that, they get so hot that the monomer outgasses, and after a year or so, they get stiff and brittle like shingles 10 or 15 years old up in the States. So anyway, if you're driving past a nice new construction project down here in Latin America, when you do see asphalt shingles, you can be sure there are a lot of corners being cut. So if you like the place, don't buy, rent. And by the way, down here in Latin America, those real Spanish terracotta tiles are dirt cheap too, so why wouldn't you want to use them? Sure, they're a little bit more expensive than asphalt shingles, but they look a million times better and could last 100 years or more. But I digress because that's not my real gripe. The sad thing that I was referring to before is the fact that first world companies have now landed in Latin America selling fake parquet and fake hardwood floors. And people are buying it because it's heavily advertised as a first world product. In fact, let me translate this little blurb right here. It says, "Are you tired of water spots on your beautiful wood floor? Nevermore. Our new innovative imported European PVC floors that simulate wood will eliminate your water spotting headaches." And then it says, "This guaranteed 100% virgin PVC product, which means not recycled, comes in a variety of wood-textured finishes." I mean, come on, I ask you, is that not the worst idea of the decade? You're down here in Latin America where you can get teak and caoba and mahogany and palo blanco, you name it, the same stuff they've been using for hundreds of years in churches and cathedrals, fabulous hardwood, that you could get down here for the price of pine in the States. And you mean to tell me you're going to buy 100% PVC simulated wood flooring instead of the real thing that's growing right down the street or even in your own backyard? I'm telling you, anyone who buys into that idiot idea deserves to live in a synthetic house made of PVC. And by the way, here's my answer to their ad where it says, in big letters now, install our 100% PVC synthetic wood flooring and get a 10-year guarantee that you'll have no more water stains. And here's my answer to that. Why don't you idiot Latin contractors and architects build your roofs so that they don't leak, you dumbasses? You only get water stains on your beautiful wood floor if your roof leaks because you're a second-rate architect or builder. All right, time for a few deep breaths now. Anyway, you gotta know, things like that drive certain gringos nuts, especially gringos who know about construction. In the States, people would just die to use hardwood floors, but they're too damn expensive. Not because they're prone to water damage, because they're not if your roof is made properly. Okay, enough of beating on that dead horse. All I'm saying is, don't fall for it. If you're going to build something down here or remodel, use the real thing. You're nuts if you don't. I mean, come on. Are Fender and Gibson and Martin guitars switching from hardwood to PVC? When hell freezes over, maybe. Anyway, bottom line, down here you can build with stone and marble and granite and jade and real terracotta tiles till you're up to your ears in them. And, of course, rainforest hardwood, the kind of materials only the very wealthy can afford up in the States. Now, if you don't follow that advice, you deserve to live in a drywall cookie-cutter track house. Oh, then don't forget to ship down your bathtub virgin and those velvet Elvis and Matador paintings, too. You're going to need them. Oh, and by the way, for all you expat wannabes and gonna-bes up there, since we're talking about rainforest hardwood, often when I'm driving out in the boonies, I'll run across a little shack, usually a kind of a tin roof bodega, they call them, and there'll be a little sign that says Carpinteria or Carpintero, which means carpenter. And usually you'll see beds or dressers outside on the street, stuff for sale, and many times it's just kind of trashy junk, but sometimes... Being that in a past life I was kind of an amateur woodworker myself, when I see a really tremendous piece of craftsmanship, sometimes I stop and take a few pictures and ask the guy what he wants for his furniture. And just as an example, the other day I was driving way out in the boonies, I mean hours away from any big city, I stopped my car in front of a lonely little carpenter's shack like that and snapped a few pictures because this guy was such an artist. This guy had a complete teak hardwood bed carved so meticulously. I mean, it wasn't my style. It was more like a florid 19th century Victorian style, but nevertheless, it was beautiful. Anyway, he had a king-size bed out there, two matching end tables, a lowboy dresser, and a full-size dresser. Not only that, he had a beautiful matching dining room table along with 10 beautiful teak chairs. And I'm telling you, just that king-size bed, I'm sure, would have gone in the States for at least $5,000. So I asked the guy, even though it wasn't my style, what he wanted for it. And he said $3,000 and he'd throw in delivery anywhere in the country. Now I'm thinking, well, $3,000, that's not such a great deal in Latin America. And when I hemmed and hawed a bit and started gearing up to go into my bartering mode, suddenly he said, oh, I'm not talking about just the bed, I'm talking about everything. The dining room set, the dressers, the end tables, the chairs, the whole works, $3,000. Now, we're looking at $20,000 all day long if we were up in the States. Now, like I said before, it wasn't my style. Of course, the wood was, but the design wasn't. Then he said, you know, just bring me a photo or a sketch of anything you want and I'll make it. Now, I was curious, and when I asked him where he got the wood from, he pointed to a stand of trees behind his property. They were growing right there. A one-stop shop. Convenient, huh? Anyway, as I was walking towards the car, he said, the whole thing right now, $2,500. So, I'm just bringing that up to illustrate to you what goes down here in Latin America and why you should not be buying your furniture at Walmart or at Sears or any junk that's made in China, because down here, for pretty much the same price, you could buy something that's sure to become an heirloom. That said, if you're coming down to my expat wisdom seminar that starts on January 10th, I'll draw you a map and give you this guy's complete information and you can do some deals yourself. Perhaps you could be the gringo middleman and sell his stuff on the internet. Looks like it could be another tremendous gringo opportunity if you get the logistics straight. And speaking of my expat wisdom seminar, we're looking at just a little under 2 weeks before our liftoff, so I'm still getting emails from people who are trying to shuffle around their schedules to work it out. And yes, I still have a few openings, so just go to www.expatwisdom.com, click on the seminar link, and sign up. Now it's time for an email. It's from Devon, or it could be Devon. Anyway, starts out, Johnny, love your show. Been listening for several years. Clearly, you feel that parts of Guatemala are very good choices for a long-term living. Is there a show, perhaps, where you elaborate on it and why? You've heard a lot on PRN and elsewhere about the global environmental collapse and overall major climate shifts going on, as well as the major financial issues that are worsening by the day, through, of course, Richard Martin, Gary Null, Carolyn Baker, Guy McPherson, etc. These issues are and will continue to affect Guatemala in negative ways. That being said, why is it that you see Guatemala as somehow surviving all of this and maintaining itself to be a relatively safe and sustainable place to live over the next 5, 10, maybe 20 years? Also, any show I could listen to that goes into detail about living in Argentina? I've heard a little about it, most of which sounds quite appealing. If there are no shows about those specific questions, what are your cliff notes and thoughts about them? Hope to raise some funds to come to one of your seminars very soon and follow that up with a big move south of the border. Just working on getting an extra $20,000 to $30,000 to take with me. As for me, I work with very rare and beautiful stones found in one spot only in the mountains of northern Utah. My website is utahonyx.com. That's utahonyx.com. If you know of anyone who would like a truly beautiful, translucent, and luminous stone for their kitchen, bathroom, other rooms, or even outdoors, this is it. Really looking forward to meeting you, Devon. By the way, you're welcome anytime to use my timeshare in Cleveland when you can no longer resist the magnetic attraction of that town. Well, thanks, Devon, for that offer, but I don't think I'll be checking out that timeshare anytime soon. And normally, I usually don't give plugs to businesses unless they have some expat angle. But since you sound like a real artist, I don't mind doing it this time. Okay, let's hit it. First of all, I occasionally talk about Guatemala and do my seminars sometimes there because it's way off the gringo tourist trail. So therefore, you do have a tremendous gringo advantage going for you if you ever get there. But that's also true of so many other Latin American countries like Nicaragua, Honduras, Salvador, Peru, Bolivia, Paraguay. Any Latin country off the gringo tourist trail is going to have a very low cost of living compared to anything up in the first world. And also, with your first world sensibilities, you'll be able to spot opportunities and do deals that no Latin American ever thought of, simply because you were brought up in a very competitive, completely different kind of environment. Because you see, down here in Latin America off the gringo tourist trail, most people still are on siesta time. You'll notice some businesses still close their shops from 12 to 2 or even 3 in the afternoon, and many of them are not open on Saturdays, and almost no one's open on Sundays except the big shopping centers, where you have many first world franchises now that are open 7 days a week. In some ways, it's like going back in time 20, 30, or even 40 years. So don't think I'm just strictly talking about Guatemala. Though there are many great places and many great opportunities for expats there. And there are some very bad places in Guatemala too. Places I never go in myself. You just have to know the difference. And as far as how these off-the-tourist-trail Latin American countries are going to survive after the next financial or economic crisis blows up in the first world, well, the fact is if you're living on the gringo tourist trail, like for example in Costa Rica or in Cancun, you're really going to feel it because they depend almost exclusively on first world tourism and first world dough coming in. And you know, traveling and discretionary spending are the first things that first world people cut out when there's an economic crisis. If you come down here, you'll notice, again off the gringo tourist trail, that most people, 40 to 60% of Latin Americans, don't even have a clothes dryer, a dishwasher, a decent car, or even hot running water in the house. Not to mention you'll see a hell of a lot of driveway chickens running around. So you're talking about a big percent of the culture that's living very close to the earth. They are not depending on first world gringo money for their livelihood. Are you kidding? Only about 1 in 20 Latins off the gringo tourist trail has ever even spoken a single word to a gringo in his whole life. And about the climate and climate change. Latin America has every single climate you could possibly imagine. They've got the stark desert climates. They've got the rainy, humid coastal climates. They've got that altiplano region with constant spring-like weather. And they've got the high mountains where sometimes they even get snow. And don't forget, in over 80% of Latin America, there's four growing seasons. So you just push a twig into the ground and come back 2 weeks later and it's sprouted. I can vouch for that. I've seen my gardener do it a million times. So anyway, I don't recommend gringos come down to a big Latin American city and live in a high-rise unless you've got some permanent source of outside income, a retirement income, a pension, an annuity, or an internet business of some sort. What I recommend is you get a place a little bit outside of a city where you can have some land and grow some avocados, etc., etc., have your own well or collect your own rainwater and be kind of self-sufficient, even go solar. Then you really don't have to worry at all or depend on anyone when the international financial system crashes. Believe me, it's you first world people and especially your kids who are really going to suffer. Down here in Latin America, it'll only harshly affect that 5 or 10% of gringo wannabes who are following closely in the footsteps of the gringo materialistic society, as in accumulating heavy debt, etc., etc. And the rest of the Latin population, well, they'll just get more driveway chickens and grow more tomatoes. Now, Devin, you mentioned Argentina. Obviously, you have missed a few of my shows lately where I really dissed the place. You couldn't pay me to live there now. It's absolutely fallen apart economically. They've got a massive corrupt bureaucracy, and they're trying to push their own version of Big Brother down the throats of their own citizens by way of price controls, currency controls, travel restrictions, and that's just for starters. And now Argentina's government's going after foreigners and tourists. In fact, I spoke about that just about two or three shows ago. So bottom line, the only possible way for expats to live a nice life in Argentina is to have an outside U.S. dollar income source, because you're going to have a hell of a hard time making money in a local economy that's crashing. In fact, I have a very, very sad and sobering eyewitness report about what happened on the streets the last time the country took a big dump, a little over 10 years ago. In fact, this report is difficult to read. It's so depressing. So if any of you guys and gals out there want that special report, just slip me an email at theexpatfiles@gmail.com or johnny@expatwisdom.com and I'll send it right over to you. Bottom line, if you want to take two steps backward in your life, just move to Argentina.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.